You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 192 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Batman number 92, Justice League number 46, Justice League Odyssey number 21, Legion of Superheroes number 6, Lois Lane number 11, The Joker 80th Anniversary 100-page Super Spectacular number 1, Stargirl Season 1 Episode 3 Icicle, and Legends of Tomorrow Season 5 Episode 15 Swan Thong. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, up first for DC news, some sad news. Legendary Batman writer Denny O'Neil dies at age 81. As confirmed by his family, the legendary comic died at home of natural causes on the night of June 11th. O'Neil was best known for his work on Batman, which included writing Batman, Detective Comics, and Batman Legends of the Dark Knight, as well as editing DC's Batman titles from 1986 to 2000. During his time on Batman, he co-created Ra's al Ghul, Talia al Ghul, Leslie Tompkins, Azrael, and Richard Dragon. He was also involved in the revitalization of the Joker and Two-Faces as modern DC villains and oversaw the death of Jason Todd, the second Robin. And he was the editor of the Batman titles for most, from when I started collecting to, well, like it said, 2000. So he was the editor for those titles for a long time when I was collecting.
Yeah, this was sad news. I mean, like in one sense, it's nice that he lived to an old age and all that, but you know, it's still sad to hear. And like you said, he's such a major presence for DC. I mean, Batman, yes, absolutely. Very influential there, but really a lot of other titles too. He kind of had his fingers in.
Yeah, I got to meet him a few years ago because he was here at Indiana Comic Con, so that was pretty cool. All right, moving on to other DC news. New Bruce Timm animated movie is in the works. The film will reportedly center around Batman, Bronze Tiger, Lady Shiva, and Richard Dragon, as we learn they all share a common acquaintance. The martial arts master that trained not only Batman, but this set of rogues has been missing for a number of years and under mysterious circumstances. When a cursed relic resurfaces, the mystery of their dead master reopens, and Batman and his former classmates face off in the ultimate test of their martial arts skills to gain control of this dangerous relic. Sounds interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, most of the time the DC animated films are good. I know we've reviewed a couple that we didn't like, but by and large, their animated universe is quite good. I think we mentioned it before. I am bummed that they're bringing an end to the animated continuity they had. I mean, I get it because it's based on New 52, and they've long since moved on from that, but it's a shame. Anyway, about this one, like it sounds interesting. I do wish that DC would, you know, be a little more bold. It feels like they're either willing to do Justice League or Batman, and that's it. Maybe Superman. Occasionally they'll do Superman, but like they seem unwilling to dip their toes in anything beyond that, which is odd because I feel like the animated world would be an easier, like safer route to go down.
Yeah, I agree with you. And there's a lot of stuff they could do DC animated wise.
And there are so many Batman ones. Like, they have done a lot, and most of them are really good. So I'm not want to sit here and complain. Like, the large majority of the animated Batman films they've done have been very good. But like, it wouldn't hurt to maybe, instead of doing the 20th Batman movie, to do, you know, I don't know. Like, they've only done one that was the Flash. They did Flashpoint. Or, yeah, you know, that's not, he's not even obscure. Like, I don't, obviously there are other, like, lesser known characters that I enjoy, but, like, not even that, just, you know, not Batman.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch they could do if they, and it's not, the risk isn't the same as with a live action. Granted, it does take time and money to do the animated ones, but you know what I mean? It's not as much of a risk as a live action.
Yeah, and I'm fully aware Batman, I am sure, certain, sells much better than if they were to do, you know, an Aquaman movie. But still, I don't know that it would. I truly don't know that the sales of the Batman one are that much higher, that it's that much more worth it. Like, I just have a hard time believing that they're, like, rolling in money with these movies.
The other thing could be is, the creators that are getting these, they want to do the Batmans and the Supermans and stuff too. That could be it too.
Yeah, well, yes, that is a great point. I can't disagree with you there.
I mean, if I had the ability to do a Batman animated movie, I'd take it too. Right. All right, moving on to other DC news. Justice League, Suicide, and more DC movies are leaving HBO Max, but will be returning. Justice League, Wonder Woman, Suicide Squad, Batman vs. Superman, the 1980 Batman, Batman Returns, Batman and Robin, Batman Forever, Catwoman, Jonah Hex, and the Lego Batman movie are all departing. In its place, I guess we're getting a new rotation of unnamed DC movies, but my big question is, why are they rotating these movies? I'm curious, are they going to be sharing them with the DC universe?
I don't know. This is so stupid. I don't understand. I'm hoping to give them the benefit of the doubt that it's some sort of rights thing and there's some reason they need to take it off of the streaming service. But the way that they're trying to sell it makes it sound like it's an intentional strategy, which is something we actually saw DC Universe do too, if you remember.
Yeah.
There were animated movies that moved on and off. Why? Netflix, I know Netflix does it, and I wonder if they're just like, well, Netflix does it and it works for them, but they do it because they're like, they license stuff, and that stuff, the license ends and it goes away. It's not like Netflix pulls Orange is the New Black off of Netflix for a year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's theirs.
Anything that they actually own is just on there. It's always on there. And that's why I'm hopeful. I am hopeful it's some sort of weird licensing thing that, even though I assume they have the full rights of these, maybe there's some other pre-existing contracts or something. But why? Why wouldn't you just have them permanently on your service? Why? I can't wrap my head around how stupid that is.
I have no argument with you. The first thing that came to my head was, are they sharing these with DC Universe and they're rotating them back and forth? I'd be curious to find out if that's true or not. But I thought that was, they just launched and they're taking all these DC movies off. It seems kind of dumb to me.
HBO Max is just crap the bed, if we're being honest. The stuff that's on there is great. I want to be clear. Like, the stuff that's available, phenomenal. It's still not on Amazon. It's still not on Roku. And they're doing this bizarre rotation thing with their titles. If you did a playbook of, like, the worst possible way to launch a streaming service, they are checking all the boxes.
That is so true.
I'm baffled. Drew, we've been talking about this since last year. They've had months and months and months to figure this stuff out, and they can't do it. I'm sorry, but I can't believe somebody hasn't been fired yet. This has been unbelievable the way they've mismanaged this.
Agreed. I mean, I can't. The only way I watch it right now is on my friggin' phone, and it's crazy.
It's not that hard. It cannot, like, obviously they're fighting negotiations with Roku, which again, I can't emphasize how stupid of HBO Max that is to do that, because they need to be on those streaming services. Like that so many people use those, and Amazon. Like, you need to get on those.
Yep.
Ugh.
I
And then
know.
I just, the rotation thing just doesn't make sense, because if you're trying, like, Wonder Woman, right, is a
Right.
way to sell people, like, oh, I want to watch Wonder Woman. Oh, it's only on HBO Max. So that's maybe a selling point for get somebody, at least hook somebody in for a month. I'm not saying that's ideal for everyone, but, like, from a business standpoint, that hooks them in for at least a month.
Right.
But if it just goes away, then what? Then no, like, nobody can watch it. That's how you encourage pirating. Like, I don't. What are they thinking?
I don't know. And I wanted to talk about this because I was irritated by it too. And I knew you'd go into a rant about
Well, I'm happy to apply. It's just, I don't even think I'm being that ridiculous with this one. Like, this is, I don't, I have no idea what the hell is going on in their corporate offices with this, because it is just, I mean, they are, it's unbelievable. I cannot believe they've gone this wrong with everything so far.
I'll be interested in to see if all of a sudden the Superman movies are on HBO Max, because they are on the DC Universe right now. So,
That would be interesting.
if those plop onto HBO Max, I wonder if these other movies are going to DC Universe. But don't know. We'll have to see.
That's a bad strategy. Like, obviously, as somebody who likes the DC Universe stuff, like, that's nice, but, like, long term, that's not a good plan.
No. You're gonna find out the hard way.
I don't know how they have, they are finding out the hard way right now. It's not selling the way they thought it would. And they've already had to, like, rebrand stuff, because it's really confusing. They had three different HBO packages, which is like HBO Max, HBO Go, and HBO Now. That's freaking confusing. Like,
Yes.
that's the, and so they've already rebranded that a little bit, but even still, it's still confusing. They've limited it down to just two. I think HBO Go is just gone now.
Oh, really?
And so you just, yeah, it, I can't. I can't have my information exactly right, but it's something, HBO Max obviously still exists. And then one of the two, they're basically, like, letting it fade, so to speak, like putting it away, not offering it anymore. And then I think people that are on it, I'm assuming, just run out their subscription or get rolled into one of the other ones. But they're going to have HBO Max and then just the standard pre-existing peer HBO streaming service that they already had. And it's going to be just those two.
Dumb. Just dumb.
I don't, honestly, I don't know why. I get what they're thinking, because some people only want HBO stuff. But frankly, I don't know why, like, from a business perspective, I don't know why you wouldn't have just the one. Like, it's that one option. And yes, maybe you lose some people, but, like, you're not gonna get people double dipping with them, because they overlap. So I don't understand.
Did they change the price point of the other one? Because it was the same. From what I
I think
understood, it was.
I believe one of them is cheaper.
Okay.
But not that much, to the point where it's like, I don't know why, like, I don't know. I think it would be easier to have just the one and focus, like, marketing and stuff on being like, yeah, it's a little bit more, but look at all of the other extra stuff you get, sort of thing.
All right. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the future on this. I'm sure we'll talk about it again soon.
I'm sure we will.
Right. Up next for DC News, DC Shazam title will be ending in September with issue number 15. Surprised, but not surprised.
I am a little bummed, because from what I was reading with this, it looked like they originally intended for a new creative team to pick it up and continue it as an ongoing. And I assume, I'm pretty sure, it looks like the coronavirus basically canceled the series, as, along with all a bunch of other ones.
Yeah,
That was my interpretation. I don't know if that's what you
yeah, that
gathered from it.
I don't know what I gathered from, but I was just sad it was ending. And I was kind of bummed that Geoff Johns was leaving the title too, but it wasn't. We've talked about how it was kind of cram packed with storylines too, so.
I don't know that his focus was ever fully on it. So I'm disappointed because based on – so the team that was supposed to take over and is doing the last issue is the one that we reviewed last week that I quite liked. And I'm bummed that we didn't get to see more of that series because I honestly think that would have been a better series, which is I can't believe I'm saying that somebody taking over for Geoff Johns would be better. But based on his, specifically just this run, I think it probably would have been. And so I'm looking forward to that issue, but I'm disappointed that it's ending. And I can't help but feel like if the book had been less focused, what so frustrates me, especially because it's ending, it's all of that stuff that we read. It was setting up. It was like a Geoff Johns setting up his Green Lantern run. Like he's trying to set up something that's going to be like 100 issues, this massive, massive story. And it was, he's ultimately going to do 13.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing that frustrates me so much with ongoings for lesser known title. Like this didn't happen. Let's just pick Plastic Man, for example. If Plastic Man were to get an ongoing and a writer spent the first like four issues just setting up, you know, all of this thing, and it's just set up for some big story, I would be intensely frustrated because there's no way in hell that Plastic Man is going to get, you know, enough issues to justify all that setup. And that was one of the things I was concerned with Shazam. I'm like, man, you are setting up a lot of stuff. And that is a roll of the dice because Shazam is not guaranteed to keep going, Jeff. And here we are. Here we are. It only went 15 issues.
Yeah. Shazam's had a history of being shut down.
They've had rights of that character since the 70s. The 70s. And they've never had a, like, truly really long run. The closest one they had was in the 90s. And that's it.
Yeah. Like, the Power Shazam, which I liked.
Right, and I'm not disparaging that one, but like that's the closest they've had to a long, successful run for the Shazam character. So, I'm disappointed because we were both really excited when they announced this book because I've been asking for it for years, and I'm very disappointed in the execution.
Yeah, they really need to do it as a miniseries. You could do multiple miniseries with it, but
realistically, yes, I agree. But I do think Shazam is a character that can work as an ongoing, and I don't know. I just don't think Johns took the right approach this time.
Yeah, it was obvious he was setting up something big, but I'm guessing his other duties just got in the way. It's probably why it wasn't as good as we expected it to be either.
I agree. It just didn't feel like there was a lot of focus on it. And that, honestly, and that frustrates, like, I get it, but it's the same thing that frustrates me, like, when Jim Lee signs on to be an artist for a series. It hasn't happened in a while, but during the New 52, he was doing it. And I would always get so frustrated, not because I think he's a bad artist. He's great. He's a very, like, you know, made his career. But he's too busy. Even, like, back then, obviously now he's even more busy. He's the dude in charge. But he was, like, partly in charge back then, and you knew that he was never going to be able to have enough time to finish those series. And you had ones like Superman Unchained or I can't remember what another series that he was on, but like the series would inevitably fall apart or have a bunch of delays because he couldn't consistently do the art for it, which is fair because he's busy running a company, but like, don't sign on to do the book if you can't do it.
Exactly. All right, well, let's move on to our next bit of news. Batman writer James Tynion IV says that writer Tom King and artist Clay Mann's long-in-development 12-issue limited series will not affect the core title. I was kind of bummed about that. But I'm expecting we're going to get a miniseries, kind of like we are with, like we did with Strange Adventures and Mr. Miracle.
I agree. I think it might be less, not quite. I feel like it will be, it's going to feel more like an ongoing superhero title than those two. That's just a guess. I have nothing to back that up. I was initially really disappointed when I heard this because obviously I really like King's run. I know not everybody does, but I really like it. But then the more I thought about it, I'm actually like, kind of okay with it because they've clearly decided they don't want whatever happens in this title, which, as we learn, the story, the Tom King story in the Catwoman one, is actually setting up that run. I didn't know that. I think it allows him to have a little more freedom with it because it's not going to be in continuity. And so he's not limited to the editors being like, no, you can't do that. Like, oh, no, we don't want that to be the status quo.
Right. It gives him a little more freedom to tell what he wants to tell.
Yeah. And we all know it really is going to be effectively the you know, bookend to his Batman run. And so you can absolutely still read it that way. And much like the end of Johns' Green Lantern run, which I really like the ending for that, it gives it an actual ending. Obviously, none of the stuff with Johns' stuff stuck around because it was in continuity. You know, the things never played out the way the endings that he set up did. With this, that's not the case. Because it's out of continuity, King can do whatever he wants, and you can read it effectively as the end of that story.
You never know. Sometimes some of that stuff ends up being in continuity later on if fans like it. Just like the Killing Joke. Yeah. That was never part of continuity, and look what happened. So it's always possible that stuff like that does.
I think Killing Joke was in continuity. I don't think they paralyzed Barbara apart from that. I thought that was because of the Killing Joke.
It was because of the Killing Joke, but that story wasn't supposed to originally be in continuity.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. I wasn't alive when it came out, so.
So, but
anyway, yeah. Anyway, I initially was disappointed because obviously, you know, I'm very excited to read the end of this story. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, yeah, but now it kind of gives him the freedom to tell the story fully the way he wants to, and I'm okay with that. I would rather read that anyway.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. All right, and for our last bit of DC news, Wonder Woman 1984, which was originally supposed to premiere on June 5th, then got moved to August 14th, has now been moved to October 2nd. Not really surprising.
I'm not so sure that's going to be the last time it moves.
I'm not either. It all depends on what's going on in the world.
I am curious if they clearly want to let this be something that people go see in theaters. I wonder if they have to move it from October if they finally just decide to bite the bullet and put it digital.
It just depends on if they're going to open up the theaters again or not.
Yeah. I suspect that they probably won't. I feel like they really want to push Wonder Woman to be in theaters, but.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
You can tell they want to, but, you know.
Which I don't blame them. I mean,
that's what it's going to make.
In theory, if theaters were fully operational, I'm quite sure it would do well. So,
yeah, I'm sure it would do.
So, but I do wonder, like, I know a lot of people are eager to get back to things, but I don't know how eager they are to pack a theater. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So, I don't know. It's just, I guess we'll see.
Yep. Time will tell.
I am very excited for the time for it to finally come out. I would really like to see it.
I know, me too. All right, well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to Podcasting has this to say about the weekly Earth Station 1 podcast. Mildly entertaining. Not nearly as exciting as the popping of bubble wrap, but slightly better than listening to Vogon poetry. Be mildly entertained by Mike and Mike as they tackle an assortment of geeky topics each week. Check out the Earth Station 1 podcast and let your inner geek out to play.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. Spoilers. Spoilers. We've got spoilers. Spoilers. For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Batman number 92. All right, Cletus, we finally got Batman back, which means I think we got all our titles back. This issue opens up with the GCPD going to Penguin's hospital room. We got Commissioner Bullock wants to pin something on Penguin, but Penguin says he wants to press charges against Deathstroke for trying to kill him. The Riddler strikes and wants Batman to solve his crossword puzzle using Gotham as his grid. Riddler blocks Batman's transmissions and threatens to set off bombs if Batman gets his riddles wrong. Riddler is not happy that Batman hasn't stayed above ground to play his game, and Batman is able to solve all his riddles and take down the Joker. Meanwhile, Catwoman and Harley Quinn make their way through the sewer, and they get attacked by zombie cops sent by the designer, according to Harley. Catwoman has come to make a deal with the underbroker, and she wants to make a withdrawal. I'm guessing this is some sort of criminal bank. Unfortunately, the underbroker has made another deal with Punchline, and all of them are robbing a bank. Catwoman quickly points out to Harley that Punchline is the Joker's new girlfriend, and Punchline quickly corrects her, saying that she's the Joker's partner. And Harley and Punchline fight while Catwoman makes a deal with the underbroker. And then the Riddler was broadcasting his signal from Bruce Wayne's office. And we find out that the designer is there sitting in Bruce's office and knows that Bruce Wayne is Batman. I'm not sure how you felt about this issue, but I kind of like this issue. And I think it was better than some of the others we've had from the new creative team.
It wasn't bad. I would say my biggest complaint with this was that Riddler's... What I assume what we saw with Riddler was supposed to be the big thing that he and the architect designed together, right?
Yeah.
Or designer. I always call him the architect. The designer.
Designer, yeah. Together, right? Yeah, that's what I'm guessing, too. That was supposed to be his big thing.
It was terrible. And I don't know if they were implying that the designer was setting the Riddler up to draw Batman to him. I'm guessing like a generous reading is that, because otherwise what a lame plot.
Yeah.
A giant crossword puzzle that Batman was solving, yes, but didn't even need to because he already knew where Riddler was the whole time.
Yep.
Like, come on.
Yeah, I'm guessing that was the designer who set that up to do that on purpose. Everything that's been playing out seems to be part of the designer's plan, and he's been playing the criminals. I think that is until he gets to the Joker. Because you know the Joker does his own thing.
Right.
So, which I'm guessing is going to launch the Joker war here soon.
And then this is the first big thing we've seen with Punchline. Obviously, we'll get into her story more in the Joker issue.
Yeah. I have to tell you, I wasn't that impressed with Punchline in this issue.
No. Yeah, and we haven't talked about it yet, but taking into account the story that we get with her from the Joker, I'm curious to see if she's going to be sticking around or if she's going to be a Joker's daughter type character. I can't tell.
Yeah.
Obviously, DC is pushing real hard to get her to stick, but I don't know. It's just, they're trying so hard, and like they're doing it in like we're going to make her super serious, but her name's Punchline. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just they're fighting so hard because it's like, well, but Joker already has Harley Quinn. I know that they're not a couple in the comics, but like that character already exists in Harley Quinn, right?
Right.
And so they're like, well, but so if Harley Quinn exists and she's kind of funny and a jokester, then we've got to go the other route. And I don't know. Maybe the character ends up being wildly popular just because she's connected to the Joker and anything Joker-related does really well. I don't know. I'll be really curious to figure out. Because like, I agree with you. I didn't think she was terrible, but I wasn't particularly impressed.
Yeah, not from this issue. And it's going to take a little bit for them. I'm guessing it's Tinian that's probably pushing this character. I'm betting it's his creation. And just like with any character, they're going to have to find their footing with it.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I totally agree with you, Tim. But clearly DC's on, you know.
They're on board with it.
They're pushing,
sure.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, they didn't.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
DC marketed some of the crap characters that Williamson did in The Flash. Like, DC was marketing them, you know. So they're clearly making a push. And I honestly, if she wasn't connected to the Joker and to Batman, like if she wasn't, so to speak, the gold standard of sales for DC, I would imagine that she would fade away pretty quickly based on what we read. But because she's in a Batman book and she's connected to the Joker, I think there's a decent chance she ends up sticking around because some people just kind of don't care.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if the book is any good or not, it's just like, oh, she's a cool character design or whatever. She's connected to the Joker. I don't know.
It's going to depend also on what they do with her, so.
Yeah. I have to say, I don't think they totally nailed her character design. Like, it's fine. I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with it, but to use another character, for example, that was, like, almost guaranteed to stick around purely based on character design, like Godspeed, right?
Yeah.
That costume is freaking incredible. There was no way Godspeed wasn't going to stick around. That costume's too cool to not use. Using the other company, Marvel, Spider-Gwen, who has a very great book that I recommend people check out, but, like, her costume design is incredible. There was no way she wasn't going to stick around as a character because that design is incredible. Like, that costume is so good. And I do think if Punchline had, like, one of those types of costumes, and I don't know what that would look like. I'm not saying I have a better idea, but I do think there would be, like, oh, yeah, that character is going to stick around, even though the name is ridiculous. Like, they look too cool to not keep. She looks ridiculous.
She reminds me of a mime. What she does.
Well, that's the thing that I find so contradictory is her name is Punchline, right?
Right.
She's got makeup that really plays the clown aspect, and yet both in this story and in the Joker story, they're playing her super, super seriously. Like, she's like, no, 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 I'm for real. Like, I'm in this because I believe in the Joker, not because I'm a, you know, dumb fangirl, which right. is fine. I don't necessarily dislike that characterization, but why Punchline? Right? Like, why? And then why the clown? Like, you know, they feel like they're at odds with each other.
Yeah, we'll just have to see what they do with the character. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, Justice League number 46. So, the Amazons are not happy that there are men on their island. Queen Hippolyta comes to access the situation where the Spectre appears, and the Amazons quickly become angry. Wonder Woman directs the Justice League on how to thwart her sisters, and the Justice League escapes to the entrance of Tartarus, and once the Justice League are past the Amazons, their anger turns against their queen, and then Jon Stewart decides to stay behind to protect Diana's mother by making Green Lantern Corps constructs for the Amazons to fight, which I thought was cool. And then the rest of the Justice League enters Tartarus, and they find James Corrigan. And then there's TARDIS, the first god of hell, shows up, claiming that he's going to be free at last.
Sure he will.
Yeah.
He definitely won't get defeated relatively easily next issue.
That's exactly what I'm expecting, too. This was a mediocre episode.
I just find it so, it's just so simplistic, right? Like,
yeah.
There's nothing, it's the same, it's honestly the same commentary on this that I had on the last issue, which is there's nothing anything wrong with it, but it's not doing anything really either. Like, you and I both know how the next issue is going to go already, and that's not because we're like super clever geniuses. That's just like like the story's not doing anything challenging or you know unpredictable. It's just like Justice League does this, they kick butt, and then they go do this and kick butt. Like, fine. I mean, there are worse things to do, I guess, right? But
yeah, it could be a worse story. But I did like seeing the Jon Stewart's Green Lantern Corps constructs.
That was cool. I will give them credit for that. That was cool. What was not cool was their attempt at the Avengers Assemble thing. That's not going to stay. I saw some article that was trying to make it seem like that was going to be the new thing for Justice. It's not.
No.
Justice League Advance is not. That doesn't ring. I'm sure that Venditti and maybe the guy after him, maybe will try and make it work, but it's not. Come on. My eyes rolled, like, because it's clear what they're trying to do, but it just...
No.
I don't know. I don't think there is a rallying call that you can do for the Justice League that's going to have the same ring to it.
Justice League doesn't need a rallying call anyways.
No, I don't think they do. And that's... I'm not saying that because I think the Avengers are better or whatever. It's like that is just the alliteration of it and everything. It just works, right? It works. And it also has existed for so long. It's so ingrained in what the Avengers are. And then if Justice League tries to do that, it's obviously trying to do Avengers Assemble.
They wanted to do something like that. They could do something simple as Batman just pointing.
I just thought it was really dumb, and I just didn't see the point. Like, why try? And it's like it's not going to work. And you're flying too close to the sun. I don't understand why you would even try.
it's going to die when Venditti loses the title,
if he even uses it again. I can't believe you. I can't believe that he would even try it once. That seems like a thing that maybe occurs to you as a writer while you're writing the story. And then you're like, oh, no, I shouldn't. That's a bad idea. Let's not do that.
All right, let's move on to our next title for this week. Justice League Odyssey number 21. So the issue opens up with Darkseid's army attacking Epoch's complex. Darkseid wants to take the revision mechanism for himself. The Justice League Odyssey set the Escalon on Darkseid. And then we see Jessica decide she's going to destroy the revision machine herself. And Epoch doesn't like that option. And we see him make Jessica disappear. And the issue ends with Epoch about to engage his machine.
I think there's a potentially interesting story that it can be told with how this issue ends. But I do worry it's getting so convoluted as a title. I'm assuming he's going to mess with time more, right?
Yeah, probably. That's what I'm guessing too.
Potentially on accident, like she says, like Jessica says, he has good intentions. But we're already in a really screwed up, weird status quo with this book anyway. And then we have Epoch do something with it. I feel like there's a really high probability of me reading one of these issues being like, what is even happening?
Yeah, something drastic is going to happen that's going to be the opposite of what Epoch wants. That's my
guess.
But
is it going to be easy to follow? That's my concern.
I don't know.
I'm not going to lie, and part of it is maybe because I don't read these as closely as I should, but like I am barely understanding what's going on with the story in the first place sometimes, and I'm worried that the next couple issues are going to be just like, what is happening? What is even, like, what is the situation? Who is where? I don't know.
I'm wondering if they're going to do some sort of version where Darkseid wins and they have to come back from that.
But they already did that. We're literally doing that story right now. Darkseid did win.
Yeah, okay, true.
I'm just saying the initial, I mean, not, he didn't win this specific conflict, but you know what I mean? Like, he won whatever the first big arc of this comic was. Darkseid won, and everything that we've been reading since is like, what happens next? Darkseid wins, then what?
Yeah, you're right. I don't know where they're going with it. Time's going to get messed up, and they're going to have to fix it. That's what I see happening.
I agree. And again, I want to be clear. I think that you could do something really interesting with that, and I think maybe they will. I'm just worried personally, and it is a fault with me, I am worried that I will not understand necessarily what's going on at that point because this title has just been bonkers. Going all over the place.
I still feel like it's going to be ending soon, but we'll see.
I, for the life of me, Drew, cannot understand how this book has not been announced to be canceled with all of these other books that are going. How the hell is this book still going? I don't get it.
I don't know.
It's got to be the Justice League thing. Like, I know you keep mentioning that, and you have to be right. I can't think of any other explanation for it.
Yeah. And, you know, people do like reading about Darkseid, so they could be picking it up to read about Darkseid.
Is he that big of a sell, though? I really think it's just the Justice League moniker. I don't know. Like, if you did a Darkseid ongoing, would it sell? I don't know that it would.
I don't know if a Darkseid ongoing, but I mean, like I said, it has the Justice League title on it, and it's got Darkseid in it. That's my point. Yeah. It's got both factors, so that could be it. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Legions of Superheroes number 6. So the issue opens up with Brainiac 5 sending out a message for all inhabitants of New Earth to evacuate. The Hurrahs are attacking New Earth, and they have Aquaman's trident. A new character called Gold Lantern shows up, but we don't really learn anything about him or how his powers work. I just noticed he had two rings.
He had a Legion ring and what I assume is a Gold Lantern ring.
Yeah. I'm wondering what that is. They didn't give us anything on that. So
they did give us a really terrible line that, wait till you hear what his story is. I was like, oh, shut up, Bendis.
Yeah, God. I'm still waiting on the freaking video.
I know it's a stupid little line, but I got a little riled up when I read that. I was like, can you just focus and tell a story for once with this book, please? Like, stop teasing all of these things and not following through on any of it.
Like the video. I still want to see the video. We got part of the video, and they still haven't come back to it. Guess I'm griping on that.
You're right. I agree with you. I don't think you're wrong.
So, at the United Planets Great Hall, the Madam Honor President meets with General Na because he feels shocked, insulted, maddened, and desperately seeking retribution against the Legion of Superheroes. And the President shows the General that the Legion has brought water back to New Earth and brought hope in defeating the Hurrahs and encased the Trident in some sort of memorial. So the general denounces the United Planets and resigns his seat and states that the future is war. Okay, the first thing I got to tell you, Cletus, that I wasn't happy about this title. We had the first part of the title focused on the Legion and their battle. We didn't get to see the resolution of that. Instead, we go to the President and General Na, and we've learned the solution from them. I was disappointed in that. And then we had this weird, the Legion found out how to bring water back to New Earth. So you're telling me New Earth had zero water on it before?
Yeah, I didn't know that. Was that, like, did they mention that at some point?
Yeah! They mentioned it when the Madam President was talking about the Legion's accomplishments. They said they brought water to New Earth.
No, sorry. I meant, did they mention that it didn't have water at some point?
No, they didn't.
Yeah, I remember reading that being like, I didn't know that it didn't have ocean. Obviously, we gathered how they did it, but like you said, if you're not interested in telling that story, but then why did we watch the first half of it? Like, what is the story that Bendis wants to tell here? Because clearly it wasn't that.
I know. It's like, it was just dumb. He should have just followed that story through this issue, not bring the second half in. We learned nothing about the Gold Lantern. We didn't know New Earth didn't have water. How are people living on there without water in the first place? And, you know, all of a sudden the Trident brings all this water. That's a new trick. I've never seen that Trident do. It was just weird.
And he introduced Monster Boy. I think there was another one because the cover had three characters.
Yeah. Right? And he was even less informative about those other two. The Monster Boy was changing shapes, and one of the Legionnaires was like, you need to quit being stuff so scary. I can't help what I change into. I'm like, they didn't give us really anything on that character. And I can't even remember what the other character was.
I can't help but feel like part of me, I don't know what Bendis's goal with this book is. I truly don't. I have no idea, because it's not, he's not done anything consistent towards like building towards something. Part of me almost feels like, and this is really cynical, but I've not been given anything to think otherwise, is he's just throwing a bunch of stuff against the wall and hoping he gets credit for it down the line. Like, oh, Gold Lantern, that's an interesting idea. Let's throw that out there. Monster Boy, maybe. Legion being responsible for Oceans back on Earth, okay. And then when he inevitably gets this book canceled because it's terrible, and then somebody else uses those ideas later, they're forced to give Bendis credit for them. Like I said, I know that that's absurdly cynical, but like that's the only thing that this book has felt like to me, is basically just like a sounding board for his ideas. The only interesting Legion thing that he has done so far was that miniseries that bizarrely had absolutely nothing to do with the Legion whatsoever, but was entirely about that Rose and Thorn character. That was really good. And everything else, and it had nothing to do, absolutely nothing to do with the Legion. And everything else that he has done so far has been just a total waste of time.
Rose was in this issue too, briefly, but she was in it.
Great.
Yeah.
Problem solved.
This story cannot find a focus, can it? And
I just don't, what's it about? Like, it doesn't feel like Superboy getting introduced to the Legion anymore, because he was basically fighting as if he was just, you know, doing his thing.
Yeah.
Right? A part of this. It doesn't feel like it's telling a focused Legion story. It's just like, I'm supposed to, I either asked to or was asked to write a Legion book. I don't actually know what I want to do, so I'm just going to throw crap against the wall every week and hope that nobody notices.
What he should do is focus on, I think what he should do is focus on Superboy and his experience of being in the Legion. I think that'd be an interesting take, but he's obviously not doing that.
It's also the most like obvious thing to do with the book. I agree with you completely. Like, that's not that hard of an idea to, that's the whole point of this book, right? In theory was, well, we're doing the Legion and we're doing it because we're putting Superboy into the future. And that's where John Kent's going to be. And then like you point out, they haven't done that. The most obvious thing to do with the book, like the very first thing to explore. And they haven't even done that. The most basic story. Ah.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week. Lois Lane, number 11. So, last issue, Lois Lane switched places with Renee right when the assassin shot. And Jessica Midnight wrestles with the assassin, but the assassin gets free. Lois texts Renee to put on the mask. And the assassin goes to shoot Renee, and the assassin recognizes her as a past lover. So, Jessica goes to save Renee, willing to give her life force. But instead, the assassin stabs her own hand with anti-life force, is released, and the assassin kisses Renee, transferring the life force. Renee is okay, and we see that the assassin turns into a blonde woman named Alicia Sanchez. Apparently, she was cursed by the daughter of a Lilith nun in a religion of crime, something or other. I don't know, I was confused by that. And apparently, it wasn't a coincidence that all these women have been in the story. Lois brought them together. And apparently there are some stories that need to be told to get to the truth next issue. Gotta tell you, Huh?
The last issue?
Yeah. This was confusing. I don't know if I forgot stuff from the beginning of the series or what, but it felt like from the beginning of the series till now, I have no clue what's going on.
I truly believe that this story changed what it was doing halfway through. And I could be wrong. I have nothing to prove that, but it doesn't feel like this does feel like the conclusion to the story that it's been about since they introduced the Kiss character, which was around, what, issue 7-ish?
Something like that.
The back half, this feels like what the back half has been about. But that feels like a complete wild departure from what the first half looked like it was supposed to be about. And now it's wrapping up next issue. And what is it wrapping up? Like,
Yeah, I don't know. That's why I'm confused.
I will say the religion of crime stuff is definitely, I don't know how long it existed in DC, but it definitely was around pre-New 52, around like 52. It's in that. The religion of crime is in that, and I think it was before that, leading up to Infinite Crisis. I believe Darkseid was involved in it too.
I just went back to
see. Which is why Anti-Life is involved.
I just went back to see who was writing this. It was Rucka. So
who would have been writing then too? And he wrote along with all the other guys on it, but he was one of the writers on 52.
Okay, yeah. I don't know. It's just weird how the story's changed.
Yeah, I agree. It's this issue clearly is wrapping up the Assassin storyline, which is fine, and that's totally that's good. But that was not what this story was about at the beginning.
It was.
I don't think it was. I feel really confident that's not what it was about.
I know. It didn't feel like that to me either. At the beginning, it felt like we were trying to figure out what was going on with Clark and Lois.
See, and I think that's what it was. I think it was really supposed to be more of an exploration of Lois and Clark's relationship. And then I could be wrong. I don't think Rucka started writing this knowing that Bendis was going to out Superman's identity. I don't think so, because this book was really about early on about Lois struggling with the idea that people thinking that she was cheating on Clark with Superman.
Yeah.
And the ramifications of that. And then, like we point out, it is never dealt with in the book. It is so much about that in those first few issues. And then it's never dealt with that people know who Clark is.
Yep. Weird.
I really think it was supposed to be about that. And then as Bendis, frankly, has a history of doing, really threw a wrench in other people's plans. And Rucka had to make the story about something else.
Yep. I'm guessing you're right on that.
Which is a shame. And honestly, I also think is one of the reasons why trying to do an in-continuity Lois Lane story was a fool's errand to begin with. Because it was I'm sorry, there was no way you were going to get 12 issues of Lois Lane without some story affecting the continuity of what was going on with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think this would have been better off being its own thing. And then Rucka could have told whatever he wants, because it wouldn't matter if in main continuity people know who Superman is, not in his story.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to our last title for this week. The Joker 80th Anniversary, 100-page Super Spectacular number 1. Yeah, I'm making it more exciting than it is. This is basically what I expected from this Joker. We had some good stories. We had some bad stories.
Yep. Exactly. This was much more in line with what these usually are. This is why I couldn't believe. I'm like, again, I won't pretend like every single Catwoman story was good, but like way more of them were than is usual for these specials.
Yeah. And what kind of surprised me was the second story we had was called What Comes After a Joke, which was written by James Tynion IV, who's doing the regular Batman title right now. The story took place 40 miles north of Gotham at Snyder College. We had a student named Alexa is getting reprimanded for her choice of Dress Like Your Hero Day. She picked the Joker, of course. And apparently her roommate Sarah had a brother living in Gotham. And three of his co-workers were killed in the laughing gas attack last week. Now, the dean comes to talk to her about her choices. And we see that she blow smoke in his face, and he starts laughing and dying from the gas that came out of her cigarette, and then we find out it's actually Punchline. And the Joker's hiding in the closet, and this is basically her test run for being his partner / sidekick. And it says to be continued in the Joker War number 95. Honestly, I was not expecting a Punchline story when I started reading that. I wasn't sure what it was going to be about. And I was very surprised it was a Punchline story. And I'm guessing her origin.
I'm going to go the opposite route. That's actually exactly what I expected, only because it makes the most sense. Because you don't want to take up a full issue of Batman telling her story, right?
Right.
And so the best way to do it is to throw it in a book like this, that on the hope that people are like, ooh, who's Punchline? Oh, I'll go read that issue to find out. So, like we talked about this already. I feel very neutral at best towards the character right now.
Well, I thought the story was interesting when I first started reading it. And maybe it's because I wasn't thinking about a Punchline story being in this. But I mean, after I read it, it made sense. But it was I thought it was an interesting origin for her.
I thought it was a little silly, if I'm being honest. The Joker's just hiding in the closet.
I have to agree with you. That is silly. The Joker hiding in the closet. But her doing this to try to impress the Joker didn't surprise me.
Okay. Well, what I'm hoping. So the problem is we don't know what happens in the story that this is leading up to, right?
Right.
And so with that in mind, we don't know how that relationship and interaction is going to go. But this story makes sense to me as a Joker story if he does this to, like, essentially intentionally corrupt someone and then screw them over. That feels like the Joker to me, right?
Right.
This was just like the Joker being, like, completely honest and sincere in his intention with her. What? That's absurd. I'm sorry, but that's absurd. Joker's like, yeah, here's the plan. If you execute it, you can be my partner. And then he just sits in the closet and lets her do it. And then it's like, yeah, great. Let's go be partners. What? I mean, come on. That's what I'm saying. So hopefully we'll see. Maybe there's more to that in the Joker war. But I don't know that we will. I feel like that we're just supposed to accept that like that's just something the Joker does is take applications.
Now, were you disappointed there was no Tom King story in this?
Oh, my God. I was so... That was the first thing I did, Drew, was I looked at the table of contents to see what the Tom King story was. So I saw he wasn't on there. And I got tricked because Tom Taylor wrote a story. And I was like,
yeah.
And then I saw Taylor, the last name. I was like, And not that I dislike him. I like him as a writer, too. But I was so mad.
I know. I saw that, too. I was like... Ooh, birthday bugs. You know, I thought it was going to have something to do with that Bugs Bunny Elmer Fudd kind of thing he's done before, and was disappointed that it was Tom Taylor and it wasn't that story. It was a disturbing story, though. The one Tom Taylor wrote.
Which one this is again?
It was the one where the Joker comes to that boy's home. He's pulling off the legs of the bugs. Well, yeah. He'd come to see his father because he was supposed to show up for a job and didn't. And then, you know, he finds the boy pulling the legs off and, you know, they have something in common. They're both disturbed.
I enjoyed that story. That was a good one.
It was strange, though. I mean, it was kind of creepy. It was good.
To me, that's the kind of Joker stories I like. And that's, honestly, that's the kind of story that I could see Tom King writing, too. He did a lot of that with his Joker stuff. Where it's like, I don't know, he's not like going over the top with like this, like too criminally genius to be believable. So, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like Tom King would have him do stuff that was absolutely abhorrent, but it was in like the setting of like a domestic house.
Right. Now, that, like in this story, the Joker came to kill his father because that's, you know, you didn't show up to do your job. That's what we'd expect out of the Joker. The boy was pulling off the legs of the bugs, and he said, if you kill them, you can't play with them anymore. That's what he told him. And that's what changed the Joker's mind at the end of the story there, where he cut off his fingers instead of just killing him.
I enjoyed that. That was one of the stories I enjoyed. Yeah. Just because, again, it was – that's personally – that's more the kind of Joker story I enjoy. On the other hand, the Brian Azzarello one at the end, to me, felt – it wasn't good, first off. But secondly, it felt like it wasn't supposed to be good. It felt like they asked Brian Azzarello to write this. He didn't want to, and instead decided, okay, I'll do it, but I'm going to basically give you guys the middle finger while I write it.
I could see that, because I didn't understand that friggin' story at all.
And I feel comfortable saying that that's possible that that happened, because I have seen Brian Azzarello at cons, like, doing panels and stuff, and that dude is a sourpuss at best. So, like, I could see it didn't feel like he wanted to write the story. It had at one point, like, that line, I think it's the Penguin, says, like, did you check who the writers on the story were? Like, it really felt like they asked him to do this. And he didn't want to, or he thought the whole idea of an 80th anniversary special was stupid and wanted to say that, but still wanted to get paid. I don't know. And I'm not saying this to insult the guy. Like, I respect that. But I could be wrong. I could be wrong. And maybe I just didn't understand what he was getting at in the story. But it really felt to me like it was not good, and it was not supposed to be good. Like, it really felt like this whole thing is really stupid. Why are we doing this? Here's my story.
I also liked the story Kill the Batman by Gary Whitta and Greg Miller, because it was interesting to see what would happen if the Joker actually did kill Batman. And things didn't happen as the Joker expected them to. So I found that interesting.
It was okay. I thought it was there was a certain lack of complexity there. I don't know if this makes sense, but like, the Joker is literally just being like, wait, why are they like, they should be sad. I want them to be sad. Oh, I'm actually sad. It was like, oh, this is kind of lame. I don't know.
I liked it.
Yes, I think we all sort of know, right? That was the thing, was like, if they're trying to do the story like that, we all sort of know that if the Joker ever did kill Batman, he probably wouldn't be satisfied with that. And so they told that story, and so it works, right? Because it rings true.
Right.
To their credit, the story absolutely rings true. I do believe that the Joker would be upset with it. But they didn't do anything
new.
New or interesting. It was literally the most basic thing of like, oh, I'm sad, and then it ends. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I still liked it though.
Yeah. It was fine. It's just like, I read it and I was like, well, that read like a fan fiction comic, if I'm being honest. Like, if I don't know. I feel like if you asked any Joker fan to write a story in which the Joker kills Batman and what happens next, I feel like a lot of them come up with a story like this, if I'm being honest.
Now, you did notice that Denny O'Neil had a story in this.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed it too.
Yeah, and it felt very, to me, it felt old school Joker to me, actually.
I enjoyed this one, especially because it was the only one that tried to do something with that. Obviously it makes sense Denny O'Neil would do that, right?
Yeah.
But though everybody else was trying to do, like, as we suspected, I think we mentioned this on the podcast or we talked about it after we stopped recording, but it was basically just people being like, how can I tell the most sadistic Joker story I can think of? And some of them were good, don't get me wrong, but like, they were all clearly just people trying to do, like, what's the darkest story I can tell? And I don't know, I liked that Denny O'Neil was the only one that kind of swerved the other way. We're like, yes, he is still twisted in the end, right?
Right.
But it's so much more lighthearted.
Yes, it is.
And yeah, I understand that the Joker's not like that right now. That's fine. But there's a huge period of comic book history where he is more lighthearted. And in a collection that in theory is supposed to be celebrating the history of that character, I wish we would have gotten more than just Denny's attempt at that.
Yeah, I agree with you. Because I did really enjoy that story also.
The other thing I have to ask, do you feel like he was trying to make that story be right before the Killing Joke? If you notice, he basically ends up in the costume that he's wearing when he shows up at Barbara's place.
Does he? I didn't notice that.
So he gets the tropical gear stuff and he gets the camera.
Hmm.
I don't know. It was at minimum meant to be an Easter egg for sure. Without question. And I couldn't tell if he was trying to be like this, like, obviously it's not a serious story, but if it was sort of like a, you could interpret this as being something that he does before he then goes back to Gotham.
I didn't even catch that. That's interesting that you point that out.
Like I said, at minimum, it's definitely a visual Easter egg, which is great on its own. But I wondered if he, intentionally.
I wouldn't be surprised if he. That there. I wouldn't be surprised at all if that was his intention. All right. Any other stories you want to talk about before we move on?
I mean, I feel like we should talk about Scott Snyder's because he is considered like the definitive modern Joker writer. I mean, hell, even Tinian gives him credit with the Snyder University or whatever.
I like the story called Scars. So the psychiatrist is helping Officer Gary Dale get over his ordeal with the Joker, and he must wear a mask to help his face to heal from the Joker's gas. Now, the officer doesn't want to wear the mask because he's afraid that the Joker might come after him when he heals. And the psychiatrist comes home to find that Rose he was talking about at the beginning of the story that he was afraid of as a kid. And we see it spray acid in his face. And, you know, we get to that scene where it looks like the Joker is hiding under his bed. But I'm thinking that's the officer that went and saw him about the problem in the first place. He wanted to become the Joker.
I don't think so. I think it's meant to be the Joker.
Really? How would the thing was? How did the Joker find out about all this stuff going on?
Well, the psychiatrist throws out the possibility that he bugged the place.
Oh yeah, he did say that. Why would because the Joker?
Like the whole point of Snyder's story is that the Joker is essentially the boogeyman.
Okay.
And that's why the story literally ends with him under the bed, reaching out to pull you under the bed, like literally the boogeyman. Okay. I thought it was really good. I liked what Snyder was getting into with like one of the reasons why the Joker works so well as a villain. That was the thing I really liked with it is Snyder's telling a good story first off, but then he's also clearly also kind of writing in a sense a thesis on like why the Joker is a good villain. So it was the perfect story to lead the comic off. And I mean, of course I can't think of anybody else besides Snyder to do it. So yeah.
Yeah. I liked it too. I just interpreted it wrong. I wasn't sure if that was the Joker under there or if it was the patient.
I could be wrong. I really don't think it's the patient. The patient didn't want to become the Joker. The whole point that we see, he and other victims we learn don't want to heal because they're worried that it's going to happen again. Like they've basically like post-traumatic, like they're like, if I heal, he'll come back and get me. And so if I don't heal, I'm saying like they feel more safe with their scars or whatever, their injuries than if they do, because then that exposes them to Joker coming after them again and maybe coming after them worse this time.
Okay. Yeah, that does make sense that way too. All right. Well, that wraps up comic book talks for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows.
You left the crew from Earth Station Who with the Doctor in her prison cell and everyone else trapped in Chibnall Hell.
Never fear, the way is clear with the crew of Earth Station Who right here. We save the day in the best possible way by giving you all new episodes.
We mean the good stuff, classic stories, big finish, fan favorites too, coming to you throughout the year with happy Whovie and cheer.
And a smidge of super bonus Graham, so never fear.
You can find Earth Station Who wherever you listen to fine podcasts. Remember to tell all your friends.
Except for Ryan.
And leave feedback and subscribe. Earth Station Who is a proud member of the ESO Network.
And we're back. Let's talk Stargirl Season 1, Episode 3, Icicle. So, this issue begins with a flashback to 8 years ago to Jordan McKent, Icicle, and his son Cameron. Now, Cameron says goodbye to his sick mother who is on her deathbed. And more moments before his wife passes, Jordan promises to make the world pay, but she tells him to stick to his mission to fix this country and to destroy anyone who tries to stop him. And I think we're seeing the origin here, kind of the origin of this season's going to be, because I feel like he's going to be the big villain, Icicle is.
Oh, for sure. No question.
Now, Courtney meets Joey Zarek, the son of Councilman William Zarek, who is practicing magic as Zarek the Great. Courtney helps Joy with his card trick, lying that he guessed her card because he was not good at it. And his father's the villain, the magician, correct? Is it the magician?
Oh man, I can't remember.
Okay.
I mean, like, yes. I mean, he is effectively a magician. I can't remember if that's his name or not.
Yeah, I can't remember. I couldn't remember either. So now,
ultimately, it doesn't matter. As we
yes. So over at the hospital, Pat learns after speaking with Dr. Chapel that Dr. King's unconscious body was dropped outside of the emergency room in his lab coat, not in his brainwave outfit. And this confirms to Pat that brainwave isn't in town alone. Somebody took brainwave out of his costume and put him in his lab coat. Now, Barbara makes an impression on Jordan, Icicle, when she pitches a community theater idea as part of their expansion. And he agrees to have that built instead of using 308 Main Street as a retail space. Now, later on, Jordan tells Barbara that he has assembled a task group to focus solely on her community theater project idea and invites her to join their first meeting. I have a feeling this friendship between them is going to grow as the season goes along, too.
Oh, for sure. Well, I mean, you know, at some point he'll figure out that, you know, her connection.
Yeah, exactly. While walking home through the park, Courtney finds an ice-shaped star in the field. She convinces Pat to suit up and go check it out. But by the time they get there, the ice is already melted. And then suddenly, Stripe's leg is hit with ice, locking up his controls. And Icicle is about to take out Stargirl when Pat shoots that hand at him, which I freaking love that scene. Now, a bus carrying students is driving over a bridge. And Icicle, who's been waiting for the bus all along, ices the road and makes sure the bus crashes. Pat is able to fly over fast enough to prevent the bus from plummeting into the water below. And then we see him flies back to Courtney after putting the bus safely on the bridge. Now, Icicle takes advantage of a truck that's coming onto the bridge, and he intentionally causes the truck to hit Joey Zarek, killing the magician, wizard, whoever that villain's name son is. Now, after getting word that his son Joey is dead, the wizard magician villain grabs his wand and runs out of the house. He immediately goes to Icicle and demands to know if Icicle intentionally killed his son. And then we see Icicle quickly grabs the wand and just freezes William to death. I wasn't expecting him to kill that dude. I thought he was just trying to kill his son to force him into doing what he wanted or something.
My question with this is I feel like maybe the son is coming back somehow, because he you know what I mean, the way, I don't know, only because of the way what Icicle told him, like, I wish you would understand I did this for him, almost made it seem like,
yeah, I didn't understand what he meant by that.
Because, like, killing him doesn't help him. Obviously, I believe that Icicle believes whatever his plan is overall is for the good of everyone. I fully buy into that. But I don't think he's so delusional that he thinks that killing a kid would help him, right?
Like, yeah, I don't know. I didn't understand what was going on there with that.
Well, but so I'm wondering, we're clearly getting, like, the teenage version of the JSA.
Yes.
It's clearly where it's going. And we're also getting hints that, like, they've hinted the last couple episodes that Brainwave's son probably also has that power.
Right.
It kind of feels like we're going to get the, like, Teenage Injustice Society also, which then, again, would imply that the kid would come back. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe he really is just dead, but I don't know.
I don't know either. We'll have to wait and see. Now, Pat decides to take Courtney to the Justice Society of America's headquarters and shows her around, talking about his deceased friends that were like his family. And Pat tells Courtney that the two of them alone don't stand a chance against the Injustice Society. And Courtney suggests getting help by recruiting new heroes to join her and Pat in the JSA. Pat says that's too dangerous, reminding her that the old JSA was wiped out, even with years of experience. And then at the end of the episode, Courtney heads back to the headquarters, grabs the belongings of each of the JSA members, and she and the Cosmic staff are ready to do some recruiting. Not surprising at all.
So the thing I'm curious with honestly, the concept works for the most part for the JSA because almost all of their powers come from something for the most part.
Right.
With the exception of the Flash, what is like, are they going to say that the helmet gives them speed, or is she just going to find somehow magically another speedster?
I don't know. Honestly, I didn't think the Flash would be in this. I could be wrong. I know she took the helmet, but are we going to get a Flash?
My interpretation of this is that we are going to get at some point a teenage version of every single one of those heroes.
Which I have no problem with.
Which is fine. And I am not complaining about that. But it's like Green Lantern works in a sense, right? Because you give him, I assume she also grabbed his ring and you give him the lantern and hope they figure it out. But in a sense, they have everything they need, right?
Right.
Stargirl, it's because she can make the staff work, she has everything she needs. Wildcat, you just put on a hood and punch real well. Like, that doesn't require... The Flash is the one that I'm really curious to see what they do. I'm not saying that there's no solution to this. I'm curious what it is, because it's not like you just give someone that helmet and they're suddenly the Flash.
I wonder if it's the only one
that actually requires meta powers.
I wonder if we're going to get Impulse.
It could be. Bart Allen, maybe?
Yep.
Yeah, maybe.
I think that
wouldn't work because that would require Barry to exist.
That's true. We could get some sort of relative of Garrick, though.
Yeah. Yes, I think that could work, where it's like a Bart Allen or it's like a Wally West, but
yeah,
Garrick related.
So who knows what they're planning on doing, but I'm really interested in seeing that story.
I am too. I am also, frankly, wanting to see more of the Injustice Society, because I just don't, it's hard for me to accept that Icicle and Solomon Grundy were strong enough to take out Green Lantern and Flash and all, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I know what you mean.
And Starman, who's clearly shown to be the strongest of all of them. Like, it's just like an ice dude? Like, clearly a really strong ice dude. Yes, I get that. But, like, really?
Hopefully we get the full story on that.
Yeah.
We may not, though.
No, and it's fine. I mean, it's not that big a deal. But, like, if you're going to also introduce the teenage version of all of those, like, if you're asking me who I think is going to win between a Magician and Green Lantern, you know?
Yeah. So, what do you think overall of the third episode? Do you think of the show finding its footing?
I do. I much, much more enjoyed this episode than I did the previous two. Again, I didn't think the first two were bad. They just, part of it really was, I really was missing stuff. Like, I know that they were, in theory, not as important, but the 10 minutes that they cut from each of the first two episodes was enough to make things confusing enough that, like, so we talked about in the last podcast, I was really confused about the continuity of Pat going out to practice with Stripe and then the mom seeing the cuts on the two of them at breakfast. What they had cut out and what you told me was that they show him waking up early that morning to go do that. That's a small scene that, yes, and I guess in a sense makes sense to cut, but when you cut that, it then makes that other stuff not make sense, because there's no context to show that I truly interpreted what Pat was doing as a montage, that he was out there for several days practicing that.
Nope, it was just that morning. I was. That's why you were confused, and I didn't remember the exact sequences. That's why when I was editing last week's podcast, I got to that part, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go check that out real quick and see what happened so I can let you know.
Anyway, my main point with that is it's surprising to me how much I think those missing 20 minutes overall probably mattered, but they kind of did. And then also just, they were so focused on being like an origin movie that frankly, a really mediocre origin movie that now that that's done with, and now that they're focused on just telling a story, it's not surprising to me that this episode is better. It's the first one that's truly its own episode.
Yep. So, and we get, you know, we got a complete story in it.
It's following the, in what I would consider, in a sense, the rules of television. Like, yes, it is still serialized storytelling, which is what it should be, but it is still its own self-contained enough story. It's not just giving you the first 40 minutes of something that you then have to wait a week to watch the second 40 minutes of. Like, that doesn't work as well in a TV format. This episode was structured much better, and it just, Courtney having more interactions at school was also welcome, and I know some of that got cut, but not enough for it to matter. Like, the fact that we saw her being an active, you know, student at the school and not just a loser who sits alone at a table. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm real excited to see where the series is going, especially with the recruiting of JSA members.
I agree. Honestly, the one I'm most excited for is I'm hoping we do actually get a Dr. Fate, because this is, I think, the third or fourth show now that has teased Dr. Fate. And they never get around to actually doing it. Constantine did it. That helmet is still present. The helmet is in the background on Legends. I think another show has teased it before, but come on, man. Give us some. It could be Khalid. I wouldn't be surprised if we get a live action version of Khalid.
That would be awesome.
I'd be very much in favor of that. I think that would be a great choice on their part.
I do too. All right. Well, let's move on to our last episode for this week and the season finale. Legends Tomorrow, Season 5, Episode 15, Swan Thong. Cletus, I love this freaking episode.
We got a finale, Drew.
I know.
How exciting was that? Oh, my God.
I know. When I watched it, I'm like, this is an actual finale. So, the episode opens up right where last week's episode ended. The Legends have escaped the television shows and now must accomplish two things. First, destroy the Loom of Fate. And second, find the Wave Rider. So we have Nate, Zari Point One, Ava, and Mick go in search of the Wave Rider and find it in a historical junkyard. Problem is, Gideon has been taken from the ship. Mick leaves to find his daughter while Nate, Zari, and Ava try to fix the ship. They hook Nate up to the ship to use his metal skin as a conduit, and they're able to power up the ship. Now, Sarah, Constantine, Astra, Zari 2.0, and Barad go to the Loom Temple of Fate to destroy the loom. When they go to destroy the loom, Atropos shows up. They trap her in the loom, killing her, and then the loom's destroyed. Now, the Legends race back to the ship where they make a jump a few months into the future. Sarah is able to see again, and her powers are gone. When they step out of their ship, the Legends discover that Lachesis is controlling the masses with a Fate Watch, which we later learn is controlled by Gideon. The Legends break into the temple to find out it has been turned into a history museum. And first they go searching in the Hall of Bad Ideas, where we see things like the Flat Earth Theory, the suit that Nate says Ray has, shake weights, which I thought was the freaking funniest, spring shoes, glitter, cigarettes, which Constantine is not happy about, and the Thong Song by Sisqó, which Nate says is a Spring Break classic. Next, the Legends find a villain wing where they are the number two villain, known as the God Killers. And of course, Charlie is the number one villain. John uses his magic to knock Charlie out, and they bring her back to the Wave Rider. Later on, the Legends track down the loom to find out it is Gideon, and Zari 2.0 pulls the plug on it as they confront Lachesis. And we see a big battle ensue with the Legends and Encores in the museum. Now, I love the fact that the Legends were in their costume during that battle scene. And
it's so rare.
I know. And what was freaking hilarious was they grabbed the artifacts of bad ideas and used them as weapons. Ava using the shake weights was freaking hilarious. Of course, Constantine goes for the cigarettes, and Nate starts the thong song, which was freaking hilarious. Probably one of the most funniest fight scenes in Legends history. Eventually, Charlie brings them the Hell weapons and the Legends in the Encores. Zari Point 1 has to go back in the totem. Otherwise, Brad will die because the two timelines are fighting for control. Then the Legends go back to the 70s and party with Charlie and her band. And then Charlie decides she's going to leave the Legends. As the Legends head back to the Wave Rider, we see that Sarah is abducted by aliens. And apparently next season's supposed to be about aliens.
That's exciting.
So they're going a different direction again with the series. I read an article with one of the showrunners talking about it, so
I think it's good. I think it's a good idea for the show to do, though, is to kind of mix it up and do different stuff. So is the actress that plays Charlie actually done this time, or is she going to play an alien this time around? she their Tom Cavanaugh?
I think she's done. I think I remember reading that she was done. Oh, yeah. Yes, that's right. Because the article I read said that they knew she was going to be leaving this season. They had known for a whole year. So it wasn't a surprise. They were planning on her exit, so.
Gotcha. I was actually, honestly, I'm going to be honest with you. I was surprised at how little roster shakeup there ultimately was. I was expecting more than what we got.
Yeah, but
it doesn't look like, and I'm not upset about it, to be honest with you. It doesn't look like Astra's joining the team.
Right.
And Charlie's leaving it. And other than that, the pleasant one that I wasn't sure we were going to get, Bayrot looks like he's actually on the team.
Right.
Which is cool. I was hopeful because I really enjoyed the addition of his character.
Well, the showrunner talked about exploring Bayrot and Zari's brother-sister relationship more in depth next season.
Which would be great, because they never really got into it a whole lot.
No, they didn't.
Because one of the two was initially she wasn't present for the story, and then he was dead. Like, they've always never been, in sync, so to speak. So I'll be excited to see that get explored more. Plus, I very much enjoy the actor that they cast for the role, so I'm really happy to see that he's going to stick around.
Yeah. But we are going to get a few new characters next season because we got to replace Ray and replace Charlie.
But are they going to replace them? That's the question. Or are we just going to run with what we've got?
Ow. You know what? I don't know. I was hoping to get a couple new characters.
One thing I was a little bit surprised about was that they brought back the actress for Marie Antoinette, but didn't bring Ray back.
Yeah, I'm bummed about
bring one back. Why not bring the other back?
Yeah, I'm bummed that we don't have Ray.
I'm not saying like bring him back permanently, but you know what I mean? Like, I'm surprised that they would get her to come back for such a small role, too. Like, they literally got her to come back for, had to have been like one day's worth of shooting.
Yeah.
And then, but then didn't ask him to come back for, I don't know. That was,
it was weird.
Especially, a little disappointing.
Especially since they're married.
Yeah, well, that was the point. I was like, it's so easy. It's not like these are two completely separate people. Like, they're married. It can't be that hard to have gotten both of them, but whatever. I wonder if the bridge was burned too much. I don't know.
I don't know. That's possible. I hope not, though.
One thing, I know I've mentioned it before, but like Marie Antoinette and Joseph Stalin are not equal historical comparisons.
No.
And I believe that the show didn't want to include Hitler because you don't really want to touch that. But I worry that by not including him or not mentioning Nazis in any way, there's an implicit they're not as bad. And I don't think that the showrunners think that. I want to be clear. But
when you include all of these other monsters from history, like Stalin, and then make no mention of Nazi Germany, that's concerning to me. You've got the hall of the worst evils in history, and you don't... I understand not wanting to do a live-action version of Hitler. Sure, I can support that. But I truly think that by not mentioning it, you unintentionally, because I truly don't think that the showrunners believe this, I think you unintentionally send the message that that's not as bad. That somehow somebody like Marie Antoinette or Vlad the Impaler, who was a minor ruler, are worse.
I don't know. I didn't get that, but you read into stuff more than I do.
I know, but that's a big context to not include. If you're including the worst evils, just put a throwaway line being like, oh, the Nazis were down the hall. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know that that's a stupid hill to die on maybe, but like, I'm sorry, but you got to mention it. If you're going to throw in all of these, like, I guess if they didn't include Stalin, I guess it could have worked a little bit more because they would have always focused on all of these lesser, for the most part, they all would have been lesser historical evils, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? They just weren't touching any of the big ones. But
yeah.
They were touching the big ones. They hit all of the big ones except for that one. And I don't know. It makes me uncomfortable.
All right. I guess it didn't bother me because I didn't
that's, no, didn't and that's
look
fair.
Into
I'm
it that deep.
I want to be clear. I don't think that the showrunners did that on purpose. I imagine that they just didn't want to touch the Nazi thing. But like, I kind of, if you're going to do Stalin and you're going to do some of the other guys that they did, I kind of think you have to, in my opinion.
Right. I see your point. How do you rate this season finale compared to other season finales?
Pretty good. I'd have to really think about it. But this was very satisfying. I mean, it is pretty hard to top Giant Bebo.
I know it is.
But I don't know that the Giant Bebo episode overall was as strong as this. This was pretty good. And it's surprising in that you could have done, like, all of the story that we got in this one episode could have probably been multiple episodes.
Yeah, it probably could.
But it worked. I don't know. I'd have to really like look at them all, but this would be up there. This was a very good finale.
I agree. And it's got me excited for next season too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I am so excited for them to do space stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's such a natural thing. I mean, I know it's a time ship, but like, it's a spaceship.
Yes.
And we haven't really gotten a lot of that, which is weird because like Supergirl does deal with aliens, but like, almost exclusively on Earth, with like maybe 5% exception to that.
Right.
So I'm excited to see them dig more into space because it's something that the CW shows haven't dealt with as much.
Yeah. So I'm pretty excited about it myself. All right. Well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Shout out, Cletus.
Yeah. I wanted to shout out about my personal favorite, Denny O'Neil. Run, and that's the really famous Green Lantern, Green Arrow run that they did, that he and Neil Adams did in the 70s. It's very famous for being one of the early comics to be tackling social issues in such a very overt way. Obviously, comics had long dealt with, you know, stuff, at least, you know, strongly referencing stuff, but I mean, that series is really very much out in the open dealing with political issues at the time and many issues that are still going on today. It was not, I've mentioned before, the first thing that Green Lantern book that I read was the Parallax story where Hal falls from grace. But this really was one of the first books that got me into Green Lantern at a character, because now that I knew that the character existed, and I also knew, like, I liked Robin Hood and I saw that there was this Green Arrow character. It was a book that I was, you know, a series that I was interested in. And it's a series that I read in both in my undergrad for an elective course. And then we also read in my master's course that was entirely focused on comics. Just a really famous run. I'm sure most of the people that listen to our podcast have probably at least heard of that. But if you haven't ever read it,
I strongly recommend you check it out. There are some really good, they're not all winners, but a lot of them are some really good issues in that run.
Yep. All right. And for my shout out, I'm going to shout out about Justice League number one from 1987 to 1996, written by GM Demetris and Keith Giffen. And if you like the Legends, I suggest checking out that Justice League run. It's really funny. One of my favorite scenes in that Justice League number one is when Batman tells Guy Gardner to sit down. It's one of my favorite moments. So if you want to check out a funny run of the Justice League, I suggest checking that run out. All right. If you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we have Dark Knight's Death Metal number one, Strange Adventures, Superman, The Green Lantern Season 2, Wonder Woman, Young Justice, and Stargirl. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
In brightest day,
in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power, Green Lantern's light.
I'm off.
Where are you going?
I've got to go punch a clock with my other boss.
I can see where this is going to be a long commute.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.